The Guardian.
During March, The Guardian's podcasts are sponsored by audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/free download to find out more.
I am Poe.
That's what I said.
Not poor, mouth breather, Poe! Poe, Edgar Allan Poe, does it ring a bell?
Welcome to another Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons, and on this special edition of the show, I meet one of my favourite Hollywood actors, John Cusack, the star of brilliant, era-defining films such as Say Anything, The Grifters, Gross Point Blank, High Fidelity, and Being John Malkovich, as well as blockbusters such as Con Air and 2012. Cusack is currently starring as American writer Edgar Allan Poe in the rompy serial killer film The Raven, finding an outlet, as we'll hear, for his gothic, impish tendencies. A printed, perhaps more considered, version of this interview appears in today's Observer newspaper, but here is John Cusack, close up and personal, on Film Weekly. So congratulations on being Edgar Allan Poe. Were you Edgar Allan Poe, or were you, did you actually kind of, do you know what he looks like? Is he kind of a well-known figure that you could kind of recreate, or is he a figment of your imagination, this Edgar Allan Poe?
I think he's both. You know, we sort of, McTeague, James and I, the director, sort of, you know, there's that icon with the black kind of bow and the little mustache. But we thought that was a little too kind of Chaplin-esque, or it was, you know, that's, it's become a two-dimensional kind of icon, like a Halloween mask of Poe. So we thought it's probably better to stay away from that. And so, you know, I looked at a bunch of pictures, and he was clean-shaven, he had goatees, they all had.
Yeah. It's like if you get to play Shakespeare, you know, you could either do the guy from the statue with the beard, or you make your own guy.
Right, yeah. So it's we sort of tried to get underneath it a little bit.
Yeah. Is he? I mean, he in England, he's one of those misunderstood guys that you get. You know, I think my grandfather gave me a Poe collection when I was like 11, and I was like, "Wow, I love all this stuff." But he's not considered like a literary genius. Whereas in France, I think he's considered a master of the short form. You know,
I think in the United States, he's considered a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was taught in the curriculums and stuff. And then, you know, he was, I think he was admired from everybody, from Joyce to Dostoevsky to, you know, I mean, Baudelaire was, you know, influenced the French that way.
Yeah.
I can see his voice in Capote and in Hunter Thompson and in Norman Mailer and, you know, the Americans, you know, I can really hear Poe in them.
Yeah. Were you one of the kids that did Poe in the curriculum and then, or did you study him closer now, I suppose, that you were going to inhabit him? It's a different thing, studying someone's literature and then studying the man who wrote them as the mind instead of the pen.
You know, when you talk in the English classes, you know, the fall of the House of Usher, you know, they would use that as an idea that this metaphor, basically, that this is the ruin of an empire, of a whole race of people. This is the house itself takes on the characteristics of the generations and genealogy of crimes and sins, and it works in that space between reality and a dream, between, you know, this world and the underworld, and even like, you know, so to, I think he inhabits that awe-inspiring space between the netherworld and the other underworld that, you know, makes the Day of the Dead interesting and has turned Halloween into a brand. But like, why do we want to go and figure out where that place is, that space?
Yeah.
He inhabits a psychic space or a state of mind, you know, a state of spirit that is deeply a part of the human condition. He's very Jungian. Like Jung would go, I mean, he's a pure shadow figure. He's all shadow.
Are you getting that from the text, or are you getting that from reading about him or reading into him yourself?
Well, you get different versions of that as you know about what his contribution to literature was. But then he's also just like the master of the suspense thing and the master of the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And he was a curious combination of highbrow and like high esoteric literary genius and like pulp, like writing for thrills and jump scares. And
I mean, you know, seeing you in it,
he was very cinematic in a way.
Seeing you in it reminded me of how close to Stephen King he is in some kind of way, churning out these great stories with great mechanisms in them that are mechanisms, not just a plot, but of machine.
I would love to hear. I mean, it would be a great thing. You know, I did a Stephen King short story as a movie, and I found it remarkable how much you could keep going into Stephen King's writing and find clues and things and stuff. And it was just a 30-page short story.
This is 1408, right?
Yeah, but I found King like this remarkable resource. I would love to hear what King would say about Poe.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be fascinating to hear about that.
And given that King is probably one of the most adapted from Shawshank Redemption to Christie, or, you know, been for years one of the most adapted people, you'd have thought Poe would have been more as well. I was watching this film thinking, why haven't I seen a Pit and the Pendulum for years? Why haven't I seen a Raven for ages? Why are these... I mean, Roger Corman did a Pit and the Pendulum, didn't he?
Yeah, well, they became sort of... The Hammer movies did them, but they did them in that sort of camp way, you know? And it became sort of known. It sort of morphed into kitsch in a way. But if you really think about it, he invented the detective genre. You know, Arthur Conan Doyle basically is based on Dauphin, the detective in his thing. So, you know, entire industries have been built on his innovations.
Am I under arrest?
I'm Detective Fields. Please sit down, Mr. Poe.
Yes, the infamous Detective Fields. Am I under arrest?
No, not as yet.
Then I'd rather stand. It makes it easier to leave.
I'm a reader of your work.
Well, I admit that many of my admirers have gone to great lengths to meet
me. Oh, I didn't say I was an admirer.
And yet you read them.
The night before last, a young girl and her mother were found murdered. The daughter's body was lodged in a chimney. The mother's head was nearly severed with a straight razor. The killer eluded capture through a window in which a lock was feigned with a nail sawn in half. Does any of this sound familiar to you, Mr. Poe?
But you're talking about my story. Work of fiction.
I'm afraid I am not.
You know, there's a bit of Sherlock Holmes, there's a bit of, you know, pure horror. There's a bit of, you know, serial killing. There's a bit of Saw in there. It's kind of all Saw. I don't love those movies, because they seem to be so. They sort of relish the kind of traps.
When he wrote, they said, "Well, you know, this is, you know, your writing reminds us of kind of the Germanic, Gothic stuff." And he said, "No, I don't write. My writing is not of Germany, but of the soul." You know, he was wonderful.
It's you got one there. You're clutching a Poe.
I was.
Oh, one of our own, Peter Ackroyd Poe.
And it's a terrific one. This is my favorite one. I think probably because I like a more concise biography. Mm-hmm. But I read the 600-700 page ones too. But
yeah, have you read the Dickens one?
And the one on London too. There's a lot wonderful stuff in Ackroyd's book.
Are you a psych? Because what Ackroyd does, the sort of psychogeography, you know, which is what is actually your film is kind of. Is quite interested in it. It's sort of taking a place and kind of feeling the intuiting and making up the story, making up a history that's a kind of, you know, lived in history, if you see what I mean. It's a history of the soul, I suppose.
I was thinking that might be why I liked it so much. It's probably because maybe it's sort of what we do as actors. But I thought this film was interesting because in a way it was much more revealing than any biopic could have been, because even though it never happened that there was a serial killer doing his crimes, through the conceit of the narrative, you're able to hear Poe deconstruct his own stories. And we have that information because we have Poe's writings on Poe. Mm-hmm. And we have his stories. And we have stuff that he said, and it's attributed and quoted to him. So we're able to put all of that into this fictionalized story. So you do get a pretty good biography on Poe within a thriller narrative. It's very Poe. It's circular, you know. It's like the circular ruins a little bit. You never know who's dreaming who, but I always thought that was an ingenious thing about the conceit of the piece.
Of the script, written by someone called Hannah Shakespeare as well, I noticed. I don't know if she's some relation, but, you know, if she isn't, I thought, well, that's a very good... It's a very good kind of synergy or happenstance. It's a really fun movie, actually. I don't know if that's an insult to say it's fun, but I always think if you put you in them, there's always a glint of fun. I don't know.
He he had a sort of a wicked rapier. Like, I mean, some of his stuff is very, he had a tragic life and he was a macabre, morose. I mean, he's the godfather of goth, but he also was always up for a fight. And he said, I don't intend to put up with anything I can put down. He was always picking fights with other writers. I don't think there was a male on the planet that he didn't hate. He just liked women, and mm-hmm. All he did was spend his time trashing other writers.
Right.
You know, he had a kind of a wicked sense of humor. Like some of his stories, like Hop Frog and The Imp of the Perverse, those are dark, absurdist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a way of casually and with brutal honesty deconstructing himself in a way that I can hear his voice or influences in Hunter Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
In that first person, like, I mean, the things he admits, you know, the courage in that.
It's something that you do.
It's brutal to himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like...
But you sort of say it's interesting because that's what actors do when we talk about psychogeography and like the kind of the gothicness that Aykroyd is kind of drawn to with London and Dickens and Poe. But then you, the more I think about you and I'm watching you playing a writer here, you're often cast as, or you often take parts as, I don't know, the kind of symbiosis between the casting and what you take, as writers or absurdists quite often. I'm thinking of Malkovich, I'm thinking of Bullets Over Broadway. I'm thinking, you know, you're often seen as that, and Hunter S. Thompson, you're seen as that, a literary soul within you. Is that something that is because that's correct, or is that because people are drawn to a sort of malevolent wit that you kind of put out?
I don't know. Maybe some luck, some combination of like luck, karma, or good fortune, bad fortune.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there certainly is a trend. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting. I think it's culturally that's kind of where cinema can go because you know is cinema an art form or is it an entertainment? And you kind of straddle both of those things. If you look at you know your career, you do Con Air in 2012, big blockbusters, but you can also do the Malkoviches, you can also do the smaller, edgier things. I'll do whatever comes along, or do you say, well, I like to work, so I'll do whatever, or do you sort of say, well, I'll do a big one and then I'll take a little one that I can work for myself?
Yeah, it's some form of like, you know, desperate desperate groping in the dark of trying to remain relevant enough to do like good work and something.
Yeah. But well, your public,
sometimes I think I do, and then I realize it's just a complete farce. But it used to be where if you do a big, big movie, then you could leverage it and make some cooler small ones. And now I think they just want you to put on tights. And if you don't put on the tights, they want to just basically get rid of you. So I don't know what's happening anymore.
But well, you're putting on the tights.
I haven't put on the tights. Well, no, Poe is like a movie that it's one of those movies that doesn't get made that much. It's not. It looks like a big movie, but it was shot for a healthy budget. Mm. But it's not a $10 million, $8 million little indie that is going to be in competing for the Golden Globes. Yeah. And Harvey Weinstein's going to buy it and put his name on it. And it's not a $125 million like Transformer movie.
Yeah.
It's sort of an in between, you know.
It's interesting because I'm just reading the press notes before I came in. There's a bit where it takes ages for these projects to get made. It was like, you know, 10 years ago, someone, they were shopping around the studios, and one studio said, listen, it's a period movie. Don't get your hopes up. As if Hollywood doesn't make period movies. But I've just looked at the best picture list in the Oscars. 8 of them were period movies. You know, they make period movies. They make nothing else, in fact, at the moment than period movies.
Yeah, it's a weird time, but
is it a weird? That's what really the question is. Is it a weird time? Because you've made like an enormous amount of movies, which is brilliant. Congratulations on that. But looking at those Oscars, you know, they were all about the making of silent cinema, Hugo, the artist films. I very much enjoyed and adored in terms of the art for the artist. But you must know more than anyone, John, where cinema's at. You must be getting offered stuff. You've been doing stuff from the teen movies in the 80s to the big blockbusters now. Where has it gone? Why is everyone pining for the golden age of Hollywood? Where is it going now?
Well, I think what happens is that the people outside the system are... There is no Hollywood anymore. Mm. There's just a bunch of banks, you know, and different streams of money that are coming in and then different deals to distribute them. So there's Sony, there's Warner Brothers, There's Universal. They're making a small amount of movies. Disney's making a small amount of movies. And then there's just independent movies that then get, when they're done, get bought up and a label puts on them, and they make distribution deals with someone and they get into the awards race. But there's basically just there's just way more independent stuff financing. And then at the end of it, you know, they make deals with some of the bigger studios, you know. I mean, Focus Films is Universal. It's a division of Universal, you know. So they make smaller films. But I don't know. It may be sort of like the way they describe the heavyweight boxing or the boxing in America. Mm-hmm. It's like an industry that since the beginning of time, everyone said it's on its deathbed and it's about to die, and it'll, you know.
That's what they say about the British film industry. It's just a collection of people wandering around Soho looking for lunch.
Yeah, yeah, that's sort of what, that might be what it's like there. But now in Hollywood, there's a bunch of people who are going around in Lear jets asking other people, do you have any money? People are making $25 million a year telling everybody they're broke.
One of your former mentors, or at least one you worked with twice, Woody Allen, always said the show business is not dog eat dog. It's worse than that. It's dog doesn't return all of the dog's phone calls.
Yeah, that's true.
How, are you still in touch? I mean, he's Oscar nominated for Midnight in Paris, which is about people going back into the past. So horrid do they find the present, they have to retreat to the 20s to find Hemingway. And then I see that Bullets Over Broadway, what's your character, David Shane? Is now going to be, he's going to put it as made as a musical on Broadway.
Yeah, and as we say, dog doesn't return dog's phone call. Have not gotten a call from Woody.
Because he's going to offer you the Jim Broadbent part this time, then you won't be so happy.
He's going to go. I'm being put off to the guy who just gains.
The big fat chicken eating guy.
Yeah, just eating too many croissants. That may happen.
It is. Do you ever? I don't. You still look very youthful and are still doing so many movies. But do you ever look back to those? To the 80s and that time, the John Hughes movies, when that movement was out, which you were never part of that, let's say the Brat Pack, for example. And it always seemed to me that, I guess you have a big enough family not to need to be part of anything else other than your own family or your own life. But you never seemed to be part of any particular scene, John. You were never part of the Brat Pack. Was that you wanted to not be, or just they just kept forgetting about you, kept leaving you out of these?
I don't remember. First of all, I was like 16, so I don't really remember much about it at all, except that I got a couple roles in a couple movies when I was in the right place at the right time, where I was a teenage actor who had some chops and a little bit of training, and they were making movies about kids, and so I got a couple roles, and then I got parlayed that into a lead role in a Rob Reiner movie. And then I was doing leads in movies, but I was never a sort of a joiner of. I had people that I admired and liked, but we started a theater company. I did a lot of theater, but I was never a part of a kind of an LA scene.
Yeah, you've always gone back to Chicago as well.
Yeah, but you know, I was never. I'm not a scenester really. Uh-huh.
And does that make it harder or more difficult? I mean, in a sense, I can see that it's an easy fix to be part of a scene, and then you're in the right place. You make sure you're in the right place at the right time. But then your longevity suggests that yours was the right game to play.
I don't know. I don't know what I mean. Something's obviously worked enough to still be doing it, but I think probably it's better to be more networky.
Yeah,
and I don't do it well. I'm like a binge socialite. Like I'll go off and be bingy, and I'll be out in the world for like a couple months into those scenes, but then I don't do it for a long time. But I think it's probably, if I was to look back, I'd probably try to be more of a networking type of person.
Yeah, but then you have
those people are very successful.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, because you seem someone who, you know, occasionally you want to. Take you produce and you exec produce and you seem to involve business wise, but you've never kind of made it like, I want to direct a load of movies or I want to become a big producer. You seem to have been able to do it through acting enough and find enough parts to be an outlet.
I just try to will things to happen and try to get things. I'm good when I can get like artists together, and then I know how to create a good atmosphere to work well and tell good stories, I think. I don't really want to
direct.
I've done some stuff. Yeah. I've done a couple of things. Nice. Directing plays and worked on some movies directing, and I don't know. I just sort of have it. I seem to do a lot, but I don't really know. Yeah, I don't want to become like probably not cut out to be Jerry Bruckheimer.
I mean, I ask you only because I've asked, said, do you look back before we did? I wonder if, as an actor, you look forward as well. I mean, I was totally joking when they say that you will one day get the Jim Broadbent role, but you know, there's going to be a time when they're going to give you the, you know, older role. You're going to play older. I mean, you seem to have preserved the youthfulness. You know, you could still be doing selling, you know, being the record store guy in High Fidelity. But even that film was about, and that script and that book are still about a man reaching a crisis point and aging and sort of realizing that he can't, you know, that he needs to move on. Have you thought about that? I sound like an insurance salesman here, or your banker. But David, have you thought about the future, John? You know, have you put something aside for the future?
Well, I think anytime you're doing anything good, it's sort of, you know, it's man versus himself, right? So, you know, I'm sort of up for whatever the whatever the role is, or whatever the challenge is. So lately I've been doing these things where I go into the underworld, it seems, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool and different. And I don't know what the next thing will be, but...
Because I think there's a devilish glint in your... And you're wearing black as well.
I had to for Poe, right? I had to. But like, so there's some sort of theme, like... So I think, I don't know, maybe the universe wants to bring you certain places. Mm-hmm. But I've been doing a bunch of stuff where I'm in the underworld.
Yeah.
Going down there.
Right. Where can we see you next?
Well, I did three last year that were all there. I did Poe, and then I did The Paperboy with Nicole Kidman and Lee Daniels, and then I did Frozen Ground with Nick Cage. So those are all very dark, dark pieces.
Nick Cage, since Con Air, the first time you worked with him?
Yeah, I've worked with him a long time. We had a good time. He's great. Yeah.
I often see the two of you in my head sort of quite together. I kind of think, well, that could be a Nick Cage movie, or that could be a Cusack movie. Are you friends? Are you close?
You know, I was friends with him a long while ago, and then we lost track, and then we reconnected on this last one. It was really nice. He's a really interesting
guy. Yeah, you two, are you two? I would put you two together a lot.
Yeah, okay. He's really, really fun guy. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing you're saying is interesting, but like anything you're doing is you're always confronting your sort of mortality, and you're always confronting sort of what it means to be a human being, right? Mm. And so whether you're, you know, 29 and you're like 30s, oh my God, I'm going to be 30. You're like, okay, I'm getting to my 40s now, or, you know.
You say that. I mean, yeah, but you're right, but Gross Point Blank, he was even the same. He was going, oh my God, I'm 30.
You know, I mean... The existential crisis is never...
But you're the guy they use now, because even Malkovich, you know, you were having an existential crisis. You're the guy they use to kind of be the audience's kind of obsession of, perhaps I should be here, but you know what? Perhaps I shouldn't be here. I'm here, but I shouldn't be here. Even your teen movies were a bit like that.
Yeah, I always think it's like... but that's where a lot of the juicy drama is. But I don't know. I think it's... I just feel more like doing, like, you know, Beckett stuff or something. Yeah. Like, you know, like, what the hell? What are we doing on this rock spinning around?
During March, The Guardian's podcasts are sponsored by audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/free download to find out more.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.